Ayes. Oye, oye, oye. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Lawrence Pagel presiding. All who have business before this court draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Good morning. This morning we're here to hear the case of Terrence Massey against the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. The docket number is 093397. Who will speak for Mr. Massey?
Massey is represented by Ken Carpenter and also appearing as
well. Thank you. And who will speak for the Secretary?
Nicole Connell for the Secretary, Your Honor, and with me at Council table is Jessica Schwartz.
Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Carpenter?
May it please the Court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Terrence Massey. Please the Court, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Make it so.
The issue in this case, Your Honor, is whether or not the Board erred by failing to consider and apply the provisions of 38 CFR 3.157B1. This matter is a direct appeal of the effective date assigned for the VA's award of increased compensation for Mr. Massey's service-connected disability resulting from his varicose veins. In accordance with the Federal Circuit's decision in Robinson v. Shinseki, neither Mr. Massey nor his counsel were required to have raised the issue of the Board's obligation to consider or apply the provisions of 3.157B1 to the Board. This is because the evidence was raised by the record which implicated this potentially applicable provision of law. And under the Board's obligation under 38 U.S.C. 7104A, the Board was required to consider and apply all potentially applicable provisions of law and regulation.
Doesn't that section say, or Chaffraff interpreting that section say, that it's all potential statutes or regulations that are raised by the appellant or the record?
Or the record, that's correct, yeah.
So not all potential, just
whole book. Yes, there is a qualification, okay. And that qualification is that are either raised by the appellant or raised by the evidence of record.
Mr. Carpenter,
yes,
you represented appellant Massey below, did you not?
I did, sir.
And you did not raise this issue below?
No, I did not.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, there's not a good reason, Your Honor. The reason is that, frankly, I missed it.
Okay.
I simply was focused on the issue of the one-year look-back window, and until I reread the Board's decision and examined the applicable provisions of law and regulation, I didn't see the implications of the VA medical record that we're relying upon in this case from 1999 and its relationship to the effective date to be assigned.
So you didn't raise it because
no.
You didn't see it in the record?
No, I didn't see the applicability of it. I saw...
So you didn't see the issue in the record, correct? Well, you didn't raise it.
Well, I didn't. Yeah, I suppose that's a fair way to say
okay,
it. Yeah.
So... is it fair to say then the record did not raise it? If you didn't see it and didn't present it, the record did not raise the issue, or the issue or the applicability of those statutes was not raised by the record, leaving whether or not the appellant raised it. Is that a fair statement or not?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay,
I think the evidence was raised when Mr. Massey, pro se, made his... claim in 2001. Attached to the material that he presented in 2001 was this VA medical record from 1999. It was resubmitted again in 2002, and obviously the Board discussed it at length. The question here is there is a single issue in this case, which is the effective date to be assigned. 3.157B is expressly an effective date regulation. The plain language of 3.157A refers to the assignment of an effective date in a case for compensation or pension. This is a case for compensation, and when there is an increase. Therefore, clearly, the existence of a VA medical record goes directly to the statute which was being interpreted in 3.157A, which is 38 U.S.C. 5110A. 5110A requires the VA to determine the date of the claim. The date of the claim is controlled by the provisions of 3.157B, one, because of the existence of this VA medical record. Therefore, the evidence was of record in 2001 when it was submitted, and it was related to the matter at issue, which is the effective date to be assigned. Without the effective date to be assigned, there wouldn't be a basis for consideration of this in the first instance. But since we're dealing with one and only one claim here, the establishment of the appropriate effective date for the award of increased compensation, then the existence in this record of a VA medical record which relates to the service-connected disability and its severity, specifically in terms of his inability to work due to his service-connected varicose veins, clearly then that implicates that evidence to the applicability, the potential applicability of that record, and 7104A requires the board to consider and apply that potentially applicable provision of law and regulation.
Mr. Carpenter, reading Dr. Wasilius's account, basically, it's a compendium of 12 years of treatment, is it not?
I would say it's an overview, yes. I'm not quite sure what you mean by compendium, Your Honor.
Well, it basically goes through the record of treatment for 12 years.
Yes, from 1987.
But I don't know that there's been an increase in severity of his condition in that record, which was prepared, I think, for Social Security.
For Social Security purposes. Well, I'm not sure that's a fair characterization, Your Honor, because although it's correct that it discusses treatment for 1987, it expressly states that he's unable to work. And in the VA examination, which the VA relied upon to increase the rating from 50 to 100%, the VA examiner, and that's in the record at page 521, expressly concluded expressly noted that since the time of his surgery in 1990, he has had a steady history of pain in his legs and has become severe enough that his physicians have recommended that he retire from work in order to be able to stay off of his feet. And then it goes on to the part that was quoted in the rating decision, which is, it is my opinion after lengthy conversation and careful examination of the veteran that his service-connected disability, varicose vein problem, as described, has rendered him unemployable both for active physical work and even for sedentary work that might require prolonged sitting. The irony of this is, Your Honor, that they disposed of this in the VA's rating decision on the basis of his inability to work, which is precisely what that 1999 VA medical record goes to, his inability to work due to his service-connected varicose veins. And that overview of the medical treatment is confirmed by the VA examiner in his examination in March of 2004. The scheduler criteria for an increased rating from 50 to 100% would have been based upon edema, and there is no mention in the VA's examination of edema, and specifically with constant pain at rest. And so that, there was no evidence of that, and the board correctly found that. There was no evidence of edema in this record, even to justify the increase to 100%. What justified the increase to 100% was the evidence that he was unemployable. And his original claim in 2001 sought increased compensation not just schedulally, but extra schedulally based upon his inability to work due to his service-connected
variable. Can you tell me again exactly what regulation you're relying upon to prevail on your claim for an earlier effective date, or on the establishment of an earlier effective date.
Well, the error that we allege is that the board failed to consider and apply 3.157B1.
Let me stop you right there. I'm looking at that regulation right now. Can you tell me what part of that regulation applies?
Yes, that portion of the regulation in B1, I'll get my copy of it. In B first, which describes such a record as this as being a claim. And then in B1...
It talks about when a formal claim is granted or denied, not a claim. Go ahead. Correct?
That's the setup.
So a claim has already been either filed or... Well, it has already been filed.
Right. And in this case, it was allowed in 1970, so mm-hmm. there was a claim in existence.
Okay.
There was a rating.
I understand that.
All right. Okay. And then B1 goes on to talk about the report of examination or hospitalization by the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Okay, you can stop right there. Where is the report of examination?
I believe it is in the 1999 examination report.
It's a 1999 examination report? No. That is the one at record 521? Or that's the letter from Dr.?
That's the letter from the doctor, yes.
Now, why is that a report of examination?
Because, as Judge Lance described it, it was an overview of his treatment of...
He never examined... the appellant, did he?
Well, I disagree, Your Honor.
Did he examine him personally or not?
I believe he did, Your Honor.
Where is that in the record?
It does not expressly say that in the record, Your Honor, but it is a reasonable implication.
No. Why?
Because he is describing his treatment as a VA physician of this patient from 1987.
When did he examine him?
Each time he saw him, Your Honor.
Okay, fine. And when was the last time he saw him?
I have no idea specifically.
So your argument is based on the fact then, solely based on the fact, that the letter that went to the Social Security Administration was an examination, and therefore it fits under B1.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
And it was an examination by a VA physician that was prepared in that capacity in describing the treatment that he had been providing this veteran and his judgment about the severity of that disability. And that information was submitted in support of Mr. Massey's claim in 2001.
To the Social Security Administration.
No, it was earlier submitted to Social Security. But in 2001, that document was submitted by Mr. Massey to the VA in support of his claim for increased compensation. And that, in addition to the Social Security Administration and then the examination in 2004 by the VA examiner, was the basis for the increase. They then determined in that decision that the issue of unemployability was moot because they granted the 100% scheduler without consideration of unemployability in either the one-year look-back window or in relationship to whether or not this VA record did or did not constitute an informal claim. Now, in that regard, and I do think it is reasonable for this court to question whether or not this is or isn't, but that factual determination...
Okay, so it's reasonable for us to question it, but reasonableness is not the standard for us when a fact is found by the board, is it?
No.
We have to be clearly convinced, don't we?
That if we were talking about the factual finding, but they made no factual finding,
to support your theory, don't they have to make a factual finding that the letter that we're discussing here is not an examination?
And had they made that, Your Honor, they would have considered and applied it.
But
and
you were talking about clearly erroneous. You're asking us to say reasonably we should find X. Well, couldn't we reasonably find this assumption that the board made? I mean, well, I'm not saying they made that assumption, but wouldn't it be reasonable also for us to say that the board made this assumption in reading this assumption? I mean that the doctor's letter was not an examination in their determination.
I don't believe this court can do that because it not in the record. Had it been in the record, then we would have moved to the clearly erroneous standard.
Right. And you just said that we can't that the doctor's the report of the doctor's examination is also not in the record. That we need to that the letter is a recordation of what was likely an examination each time he met him.
Right.
So if we can't consider something in the record, it has to go both ways, doesn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, except that I think you're missing the point that I'm trying to make here, which is that this regulation, this evidence, this May 1999 VA medical record, triggered consideration of this regulation. Okay. The board didn't do that. That was error. That's all I'm saying. I am simply conceding for the purpose of this argument that it is reasonable to question the content, whether it was or wasn't an examination, etc.
Would you mind stating that again? I'm not sure that I heard it.
Okay. What I am offering, what I'm trying to describe is that the error alleged is predicated on the board's failure to consider and apply this regulation, and that the need to consider and apply it was because this regulation was implicated because of the existence in the record of a VA medical record, which dealt with the severity of the condition, which could have been interpreted under 3.157B1 as an informal claim for increase.
Wait a minute. You use the term VA record or medical record.
Correct.
The term in the regulation is VA examination.
I understand that, John.
Okay.
What I'm saying is that what existed in the record should have triggered consideration of that very question.
Okay.
And it didn't.
Okay.
And because it didn't, that was error.
Okay.
Mr. Carpenter?
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I have a couple of fundamental questions that I hope you can shed some light on for me. First of all, directing your attention to 3.1571,
mm-hmm.
and the language in the regulation is a report of examination or hospitalization. As I look at that regulation and search the regulations for a definition of report of examination, I don't find one. So the regulation leaves me a bit in a quandary as to what constitutes a report of examination. Perhaps this letter does. Perhaps it doesn't. But I look for guidance on what that language means, and I don't find any other than in the M21, which goes through a fairly detailed listing of requirements for a report of examination. Are you familiar with that provision?
Mm-hmm.
And is it your position that the letter written and dated May 28, 1999 fulfills the requirements under the VA M21?
I'm not really sure that it does, Your Honor. However, if you go to the last sentence of B1, it says the provisions of this paragraph apply only when such reports, now it's shifted in its language, relate to examination or treatment of a disability for which service connection has been previously established, or when the claim specifically, or when a claim specifically the benefit sought is received within 1 year of the date of such examination or treatment. Well, that last phrase doesn't apply here. But what I believe does apply here is that this is a report of a VA physician who has described, as Judge Lance put it, his overview of the treatment of this patient since 1987 to 1999. And in that context, it is a report of treatment of a disability which has been previously established to be service-connected. And therefore, I think we have to go back to the Robinson case and the question of what implicates the board's responsibility to consider evidence, whether or not it is raised by the evidence of record. It was raised by this 1999 VA medical record. And that simply implicated their requirement to address it, not to necessarily apply it favorably, but to address it. And it is the sound of silence from the board's decision that is the error here. They did not address the applicability of 3.157B1. They did discuss the record, but they discussed the record in the context only of that one-year look-back window.
April 2001 was the period.
Yes, right. I believe that's correct.
Period at issue. Well, as I look at the M21, it does have a number of requirements that the examination report must include. Directing your attention to that provision, it discusses an up-to-date medical brief and industrial history from the date of discharge, a record of subjective complaints, description of objective facts, answers to questions that may have been included in the examination request, a diagnosis. And it says a VA examination report that does not meet all the above requirements is not sufficient. From your perspective, does the letter meet those requirements?
The letter does not, Your Honor, but I don't believe the letter needs to, because what is being described in the M21 is a report that is adequate for rating purposes.
Mm-hmm.
This report is not necessarily adequate for rating purposes. It is adequate to trigger consideration of 3.157B1 because it is the treatment of a disability of a service-connected disability which has been established.
Well, from the range of correspondence that might be similar to your letter, let's say, and let's say there's a report out there that has all of these items checked off. So mm-hmm. we have this letter and this report. How does the court define what falls within the definition of report of examination?
I'm not
without
sure
that, more in the regulation.
I'm not sure you can, but frankly, that's not before the court today. What's before the court today is whether the board was or wasn't required to have considered and applied this regulation. If this goes back on remand and the board applies it and says that it, or considers it and says it does not apply, then I believe that Pandora's box is open. Then we come back and discuss how you can rely upon the language of this regulation to limit or constrict the ability of a veteran to rely upon 3.157B1 by saying that it does not apply because it doesn't conform with a examination which is available for rating.
I see you're out of time, but I do, may I follow up a question? I do have one other question I'd like you to respond to, and that is I want to make sure I'm clear on your position here. It is that the mere existence of this letter, whatever it is, triggered a consideration of 3.157.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, Nicole Cottle for the Secretary. Neither appellant nor the evidence of record in this case reasonably raised the issue of whether Dr. Westlace's May 1999 letter was an informal claim for an increased rating such that the board should have considered and applied 38 CFR section 3.157. Specifically, the letter's presence in the record did not implicate the plain language of section 3.157B because it did not include a date of examination or a date of admission to a hospital. The regulation provides that once a formal claim for compensation has been allowed, receipt of a report of examination or hospitalization by VA or Uniformed Services will be accepted as an informal claim for increase. And it further provides that the date of outpatient or hospital examination or the date of admission to a VA hospital will be accepted as the date of the receipt of the claim. And in this case, we have no such date. Dr. Westlace's letter is dated May 28, 1999. There is no indication in his letter that he performed an examination of appellant at that time, nor has appellant alleged that there is. In addition, there's no evidence in his letter that the appellant was hospitalized at that time, nor has appellant alleged that there is. Therefore, the foundation of appellant's argument is wrong. Appellant argues that the date of the report must be accepted as the date of the claim for increase, but that's not what the regulation provides.
Ms. Cottle.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So As I understand your position, the definition under 3157B1, report of examination, necessarily requires there to be a date of examination and or a date of hospitalization?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And I understand the logic there, but I'm curious as to where, what you rely on for support of that.
The first sentence of section 3.157B1, after the title report of examination or hospitalization, states that the date of outpatient or hospital examination or date of admission to a VA or uniformed services hospital will be accepted as the date of the receipt of the claim.
So a letter from a medical doctor from the VA that does not include a date of examination, maybe by error, would constitute a report of examination or not?
It would not. In this case, Dr. Westlis's letter includes no indication that he examined the appellant. There's nothing in the letter that would trigger 3.157B1 because there's no evidence of an examination, there's no evidence of hospitalization. It's really just a letter looking backwards over the last 12 years of appellant's treatment at the VA.
And your position is that the examination or hospitalization should also be contemporaneous with the report?
I believe that if the report specifically stated, I examined appellant on blank date, that date could serve, but that's not the case here.
I understand, but I'm asking a hypothetical.
I'm sorry.
The hypothetical is if there was reference in the letter to an examination, first, would it need to be contemporaneous? But secondly, suppose there's no date in the letter, but a reference to an examination.
I believe that it would not need to be contemporaneous. To the extent that the letter stated, yes, I examined him, but didn't provide a date, is that what
you're... Yes.
I think then in that case it may trigger a duty to look to see whether the record contains another examination from Dr. Westlis on whatever date. But again, that's not in the record in this case.
Well, from the court's perspective, how are we to determine what kind of communication from a physician at the VA constitutes reports of examination or not?
Essentially, just by looking at the plain language of the regulation. I mean, it provides for examination or hospitalization, and in this case, we have neither.
Okay. If I go to the doctor under the normal situation, the first thing that happens is they generally have me weigh in, they take my blood pressure, the doctor comes in to see me, asks me what the problem is, or maybe a physical. When those tests are done, because somebody does these to me, and the doctor reads them, is it fair to say that's an examination?
So you're saying you've had these tests done perhaps at an earlier date and the doctor's reading them on this date? Or
no, this
date. It's all on the same date?
Same day.
Yes, I think that would be fair to say that that's an examination.
Okay. And if the doctor writes that in my medical record, is that a report of an examination?
Yes, I believe so. He examined you. He reported it. That would be a report of an examination.
Okay. So then why is it... So I guess let me ask another question. So from this statement, are you saying that that type of encounter with the doctor would fit within the definition of report of examination?
Yes, I believe that it would.
Okay. So we don't need to look at the M21 or anything else because, generally speaking, report of examination would include what I said. Okay. Then why is it in this case we can't consider the letter, which in fact summarizes these encounters with the doctor, as being a report of examination consistent with the regulation?
Because it doesn't include any information about Dr. Wesley's, or I'm sorry, about appellant having come in to the VAMC and having such tests done or having any sort of examination done. If you look specifically at the language of the letter, it says that he's been caring for the appellant for since approximately 1987. It doesn't say anything about any specific examinations or tests that were run.
Are there any in the record?
Not in the record before the court. In the record before the agency, the secretary has found that there are some reports from Dr. Wesley's, but none of them relating to varicose veins.
And when are they dated?
They are dated...
When was the last one dated?
I believe it was in 1998.
Okay, would that be within... I'm sorry, I'd have to look at my timeline.
It would not be within 1 year of the appellant's effective date, no.
So let me get this straight. The last time there's a report of any type that Dr. W. West, was it West?
Wesley's possibly, okay. Wesley's,
all right.
Unclear, sir.
The last in the record, whether it be record before the agency or record of proceedings, that the doctor actually had an encounter with the appellant was in 1998. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Based on our review, that's correct. And again, that was not for the disability that's on appeal here.
Okay. But regardless of that, mm-hmm. it was not within the 1 year that appellant is arguing is applicable here.
No, it is not.
Okay.
Counsel, does a report of examination have to be adequate for rating purposes, or does it merely need to indicate under McClendon whether increased benefits or a reopening is warranted?
I believe that there's no indication in the regulation that it requires that there's an adequacy requirement. Essentially, the regulation does provide in other instances, such as if the appellant was submitting evidence from a private physician or a layman, that in that case it would have to show a reasonable probability of entitlement to benefits, and the regulation doesn't require any such language with regard to a report of examination or hospitalization by VA.
If a VA examiner conducted an examination but failed to file a report in the VA record system, would that be adequate?
Yes.
If it could be proven?
Yes, if it could be proven. The examination was conducted.
Judge Hagel was talking about his blood pressure and his weight.
He overlooked his height.
Counselor, what troubles me is the use of terms in these regulations without any, from my standpoint, clear definition.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to Merriam-Webster's Medical Dictionary and New Oxford American Dictionary and Dorland's Medical Dictionary for a definition of what is an examination or report of examination. And as my esteemed colleagues indicated, examination is defined as the act or process of inspecting or testing for evidence of disease or abnormality in Merriam-Webster. In New Oxford, it is examination is defined as a detailed inspection of investigation and the action or process of conducting such an inspection or investigation. And in Dorland's, it is defined as inspection, palpitation, percussion or other means of investigation, especially for diagnosing disease. Does this letter evidence that there may have been the action or process of conducting an inspection or investigation over a 12-year period by this physician? He was the attending physician, as I understand it.
He was. Based on that dictionary definition, I think you could say that there was an inspection. I think that at the time that Dr. Wesley wrote the May 1999 letter, he probably reviewed the appellant's prior records, but I don't believe he conducted an examination at that time.
Okay. Just from a prospective thinking perspective, if you were in charge of the VA, would you... you like that idea?
Absolutely.
would there be anything that might come to mind regarding amending the regulation?
In order to clarify?
Yes.
I think that it's clear on its face. I mean, it requires an examination or it requires admission to a hospital. There is, in the procedural or the regulatory history, an October 1976 notice of proposed rulemaking. And it's instructive essentially just in that it backs up the plain language of the regulation and it speaks of requiring specifically a physical examination to be accepted as the date.
Well, I don't know that I would disagree with you regarding it requiring an examination.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure when and what the circumstances might be based upon the definition. So I guess that's kind of where I was going is, you know, is there a way to make this provision better? Obviously, that's not the issue at the moment, but it would help me in trying to figure out what this letter is.
Indeed. As head of the VA, I would always strive for more clarity.
That's an answer I kind of like.
Thank you, Your Honor. In addition, there is no harm in any error. To the extent that the board erred in failing to consider 3.157, it was a harmless error. The board specifically made findings in this case that there was no allegation or evidence of worsening in the letter provided by Dr. Vasilius. And the board considered in its decision that the rating criteria for the 60% rating, the next higher rating under Diagnostic Code 7120, the board found that there was no evidence, the letter offered no evidence that appellant met any of this criteria. The most that the letter says with regard to varicose veins is that the appellant experiences significant pain when he's on his feet for any period of time, and that actually corresponds with the 10% rating criteria under DC 7120, which provides a 10% rating for aching and fatigue in leg after prolonged standing or walking. So to the extent that the board should have considered 3.157 and didn't, there would be no error to appellant. No harm, that is, to appellant. Additionally, the secretary would like to point out that appellant did not raise the issue regarding Dr. Westlis's letter and his that Dr. Westlis's letter was an informal claim. He limited his arguments in both his December 2006 NOD and his November 2007 substantive appeal to arguing that Dr. Westlis's letter was evidence of an increase in the one-year period prior to appellant's current effective date.
But he raised it here on appeal.
He did.
And we could consider.
Absolutely, you could consider it, but there is no reason that the board should have considered it because appellant didn't raise it and the record didn't raise it.
Counselor, if I understood your remarks prior to your response to Judge Davis, what you're saying is that this May 99 letter really doesn't offer anything new.
Correct.
It's just a regurgitation of what has happened over the last 12 years.
Correct.
But there's no new data injected in this.
Correct.
Which I believe is somewhat contrary to what Mr. Carpenter was arguing.
I believe it is. Mr. Carpenter referred to the letter referring to appellant's employment, but the letter's reference to appellant's inability to perform work was specifically regarding his sleep apnea and his periodic leg movement. It didn't make any findings in that regard regarding his varicose veins, which is the issue here on appeal.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your Honors, if you have no further questions, for these reasons, the Secretary asked that the Court affirm the May 19th, 2009...
Not so fast. Okay. I have a lot more questions.
Absolutely.
The applicability of the M21.
Yes.
What's your position on that?
The Secretary's position is that it would be applicable and instructive in defining what it is to be a VA examination.
So does report of examination in 3.157 mean what the VA manual says is a report of examination?
I believe that they could be read together to inform the court's reading of what an examination is.
Well, that's exactly what I'm looking for, something to inform me as to what that term means. And it appears that the manual provision seems to be focused on C&P types of examinations for rating purposes. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I don't have a copy of it in front of me, but I believe that's correct.
Okay. And if that's the case, is there anything that would prevent that definition from being applicable to 3.157?
I don't think that 3.157 necessarily is limited to reports for compensation and pension. I believe that it accepts a report of examination or hospitalization by VA or uniformed services, but is possibly broader than just compensation and pension examinations. Like, in the instance, if the appellant were to seek treatment at a VA MC and he was examined at that time, I believe that would be considered a report of examination under the regulation.
Okay. The board certainly addressed the letter.
Yes, it did.
Did it not?
Yes, it did. It addressed the letter in the context of whether it was evidence of an increase in the one-year period prior to appellant's April 2001 effective date, and it found that it was not, because it predated the one-year look-back and because it found no evidence that Dr. Wesleyus had treated the appellant in the one-year period prior to his April 2001 effective date.
But appellant's counsel's position is that the mere existence of that letter in the record should have triggered consideration of 3.157.
We disagree.
And you disagree because it did not include the treatment during the relevant period and other reasons?
Also because it doesn't include any indication of a date of examination or date of admission to the hospital as required by the regulation.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. If there are no further questions?
I have a question. Or two. is there any place else other than the M20 potential of the M21-1 that we could look to determine the meaning of examination in 1.57?
No, Your Honor. There's no way that I would direct you.
Okay. The next question I have is, as I recall, what is the remedy that the Secretary is requesting?
The Secretary is requesting affirmance, finding that there was no error in the Board not discussing 3.157 because it was not reasonably raised either by the appellant or by the evidence of record. However, to the extent that the Court would remand the issue under, say, Majid for the Board to consider in the first instance, the Secretary would not be opposed to that.
Okay. Now, a follow-on question to that. As I recall, Maggot, however you pronounce it, said that if there is a claim that exists, and if there is a theory upon which that claim could be allowed, or I guess the board decision could be affirmed, if it wasn't raised to the court, then the court has the discretion not to deal with that. Is that correct?
That's
is that
my
your
understanding,
reading?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Robinson, on the other hand, it seems to me sort of limits that, because Robinson dealt with two different theories, and Robinson says that once that situation exists in the record, the court must remand. Now, do you have a position on that what I see as an apparent conflict.
To be clear, Your Honor, are we speaking about the Federal Circuit's decision in
yes.
Robinson?
Mm-hmm. Or if you go ahead. I'll let you answer that to the degree you're able.
I'm sorry, you're asking whether I see a conflict between the Federal Circuit's decision and Majeed.
Well, I guess, you know, the best way to say it is Magid still good law?
Yes, I believe that it is.
And why? If the Federal Circuit has told us that we must remand in such a situation, why it... Now, admittedly, the Federal Circuit didn't specifically say they were overruling Magid, but I perceive some sort of a conflict there. I'm not mm-hmm. sure what it is, but can you inform me on that? The Secretary's position on that.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I think that I would need to reread Robinson in order to okay. really provide any more detail in that regard.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, the Secretary requests that you find that the issue of the application of 3.157B was not raised in the record either by the evidence of record or by appellants, and that the Board did not err in failing to consider it, and as such to affirm the Board's May 2009 decision. Thank you.
May it please the Court. I'd like to begin with the discussion about Majeed versus Robinson. And although I think there is some tension there between the two, it seems to me that it is easily reconciled if you look at Majeed as the general rule and Robinson as the specific rule. The general rule being that if the matter was not raised below, then this is a matter of discretion for this Court. However, if the matter raised for the first time at court was also reasonably raised by the evidence, then the specific rule in Comer, Roberson, and now Robinson applies. And therefore, if you will, the specific controls over the general.
So that means that Robinson is now the law?
Yes.
So Magid is gone?
I think it's still available in the general context where there is not a circumstance where the appellant can point to it having been raised in the record below and simply say that this is an issue that should have been presented and was not, and then ask this Court for the discretion to send it back on remand for that consideration.
So, and how does that apply to this case?
I don't believe it does apply to this case in the Majeed rule. I believe that the rule in Robinson applies because it was reasonably raised by the existence in the record from 2001 of the May 1999 VA record.
Okay.
Tell me if your opinion is that maybe the Federal Circuit's logic in the Schottel, De Schottel, remember that case?
Schottel. Yes. Yes.
Where they established two concepts of due process, one by a pro se and one by a represented appellant. Doesn't that have some application here?
I don't think so after Robinson. I think Robinson makes very clear that if the issue is raised by the evidence, that whether there was representation or not is not part of the equation.
Well, sorry.
No, go ahead.
But I think if you look at the... My recollection of Robinson is that our decision in Robinson, this Court's decision in Robinson, said that the presence of an attorney in the case is not controlling, but is a factor. Now, would you agree with that?
I agree that that's what this case, excuse me, what this Court said in Robinson v. Mansfield. I would not agree that the Federal Circuit concurred with that.
Well, in Robinson, we said that. Now, why do you believe the Federal Circuit didn't agree with that?
Well, the holding is described as the board was obligated to consider direct as well as secondary service connection if raised by the record. So that the qualification is if raised by the record, and then the court specifically addressed the question of raised by, we hold only that the veteran's efforts to raise the issue of direct appeal should be liberally construed whether or not the veteran is represented by counsel.
Well, that still doesn't address the fact whether or not this court could consider as in its equation whether or not somebody was represented. Yes, it must be liberally read, but one of the factors, at least our court has said, is whether or not representation was provided.
Well, I'm sorry, except I think we're going in two different directions. The direction, it seems to me, that the Federal Circuit was going is what the board's obligation was, and that's what this appeal is about, whether the board violated its obligation under 7104A to consider and apply all potentially applicable provisions of law and regulation.
That were raised by the record or the appellant.
That's correct. And if it were raised by the record, which we believe it was in the May 1999 record, then the consideration of whether counsel did or didn't present it, I believe, is not pertinent. On another matter, just as clarification, Your Honor, Judge Hagel questioned the government about the Dr. Vasilius' treatment within the one-year period. The 3.157B1 isn't related to the one-year period. It is only related to whether or not this record... Okay, I just wanted to make sure that there was no confusion about
that. But in order to give you the relief that you're seeking, or the appellant, the relief that the appellant is seeking, doesn't some examination, some report of an examination have to have occurred during that 1 year?
No, I do not believe so.
Why not?
Because it's the date of that record, and the date of the record is May 1999.
You're talking about the letter.
Yes, the letter. The date of the letter is May 1999. So we believe that under 3.157A and 5110A, that's the date that you use for the date of the claim.
I understand, because the appellant's position is that that is a report of examination.
Well, it's a qualifying VA record under 3.157B1, and I know the court has focused extensively on examination, and while I still believe that this was an examination inherently, the fact is that the regulation also refers to a report related to treatment of a disability, and we believe that that clearly qualifies this record.
Doesn't it say such an examination before that, or such a report, or something like that?
Well, I'm referring to the, yes, it says such reports relate to examination or treatment of a disability for service connection which has been previously established.
But it's it does say such examinations referring back to report of examination. So we would have to find that the letter is an examination, is the appellant's position.
Well, clearly, I think it's a qualifying examination.
It's a report, even liberally treating it.
Yes.
So, doesn't the... Now, let me ask you one other question. Is, do you agree with the Secretary's position that the last liberally construed examination that the doctor provided was, in fact, outside the one-year period?
That's in the record. That would be correct, Your Honor. Yes.
So it all hinges on the court's decision about what is or is not a report of examination.
Well, I'm not entirely sure that that's correct, Your Honor. I believe that it is necessary for this court to determine in its collectiveness what is meant by 3.157B1, but I don't believe an interpretation is necessarily required unless this court wants to go that far. The issue is, is there a basis for this report to have triggered the board's obligation to consider?
Understand.
Mr. Carpenter, yes. Let me follow up on that point first, I guess. Under 3.1571B1, mm-hmm. what, in your view, does the sentence, the provisions of this paragraph apply only when such reports relate to examination or treatment of a disability for which service connection has previously been established? What does that mean?
It means any VA medical record that discusses the previously established disability. That is the type of report of treatment that implicates this regulation. Now, whether that report is good enough to support an increase is another statement, another determination. The question is the triggering event. And I believe any time a VA physician reduces to writing something about a service-connected disability, that implicates 3.157B.
To the extent that the report relates to an examination or treatment, which you maintain this letter does relate to an examination or treatment over a long period of time.
Correct.
Page one of your reply brief, mm-hmm. you have a sentence at the beginning that says the position taken by the VA would require an appellant to be clairvoyant.
Yes.
Which I like the language, but I wonder if what you're seeking is requiring the VA to be clairvoyant. Or the board, because your position is that this was the issue of the application of 3.157 was reasonably raised by the record. And so this letter, and the letter then needs to reasonably raise an examination, as Secretary's counsel suggested. It needs to raise the issue of varicose veins. And I just wonder if that reasonableness is supported by the context of the letter.
Well, I think it is, Your Honor. Number one, this is a VA physician. Clearly, the implication of this record is, and I cannot tell you that this is exactly what this letter was used for, but the implication is this letter was used by the veteran in support of his Social Security claim. Right? Clearly, that was in an endeavor to get disability compensation from a sister agency. This agency is supposed to be veteran-friendly. The veteran's own physician from the VA recorded statements that relate to the severity of the disability. When the board looked at this, and they're supposed to look at the entire record, they saw the 2005 decision that made the award for a total rating. They saw the examination. And if you compare that examination to the report from Dr. Willis's in 1999, they're nearly identical in their characterization of the limitations that are imposed by this service-connected disability to this veteran's ability to work. And the basis for the award of the 100% was based exclusively on his inability to work. There is no reference whatsoever in the VA's decision granting 100% to edema. That's the standard, edema with constant pain while at rest. That's the criteria for 100%. The doctor doesn't mention that in his VA examination. The VA's rating decision does not mention that. It talks about his inability to work. That's what the VA treating physician said. At the very least, the board should have said, based upon the entirety of this record, in fairness to this veteran, we're going to go back and ask our own physician, what did you mean? But they didn't do that. And they could have done that, and that would have affected the effective date to be assigned from 1999 to 2001. I see my time is out. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Okay, the court is, I mean, the case is submitted. We will now greet counsel.
All right.